Members, the hours of 12:45 having arrived, I will call to order the February 13th meeting on Greater Minnesota Jobs and Economic Development. It does not look like we have a quorum yet, so we will start with our presentation from Executive Director Jeff Freeman of the Public Facilities Authority. Once we do get a quorum, we'll just take a brief pause so we can move the previous meeting's minutes. So, Executive Director Freeman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon, members. My name is Jeff Freeman. I'm the Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority, and here to give sort of an overview of what the PFA is and how we operate. We are kind of different from most state agencies. The PFA is essentially an infrastructure bank. We are made up of or governed by a board of six state agencies, commissioners from six state agencies, and our main mission is to provide financing to cities and other local governments for water infrastructure projects, both wastewater as well as drinking water. I think you have in your packet some handouts that we have. There's a couple with our logo on it. There's like an org chart, and then there's a table of projects. I'll be starting from the handout that says PFA overview. So as I said, made up of multiple agencies, governed by a board, commissioners from Pollution Control Agency, Department of Health, Management and Budget, Department of Agriculture, Transportation, and Employment and Economic Development. And what we do, as I said, we're an infrastructure bank. We manage the investments and transactions of several different revolving loan funds, and then administer a variety of loan and grant programs in conjunction with our member agencies. And in our largest programs related to water infrastructure, the Pollution Control Agency provides the does the technical side of things in terms of project reviews, also sets the project priorities based on a priority list that they maintain. On the drinking water side, it's the health department that does those technical reviews and the priority list. PFA staff are working on the financial side. We do the credit reviews of the applicants, the cities, looking at their revenues from their sewer or water enterprise funds, revenues generated by user charges and other things, make sure that they have sufficient revenues to operate and maintain their system and pay back the loans and any other debt that they might have. The most of our funding always has some kind of loan component, and then the grants are packaged as part of that when cities are eligible for particular grant programs. I'll explain more about that. The projects we're talking about are rehabilitation, construction, replacement, upgrade of drinking water treatment plants, wastewater treatment plants, all the underground sewer collection systems, the water mains, the pumping stations, the water towers, all of that kind of basic municipal water infrastructure. The health department and the Pollution Control Agency have priority lists, as I said, in there, and they have rules that determine score priority points based on age and condition of the existing infrastructure, as well as environmental and public health factors that go into their ranking system. Our largest programs are the Clean Water and Drinking Water revolving loan funds, which combine annual federal capitalization grants, state match dollars with loan repayments, and PFA revenue bond proceeds, to provide a permanent source of low-cost capital for cities to do these kinds of projects in perpetuity is the language in the federal law. All of the loan repayments revolve back into the fund, and we're charged with managing those all those assets in perpetuity. As a part of those include our sale of PFA revenue bonds. We have authority to issue up to $2 billion in revenue bonds. These are not backed by the state in any way. They're totally backed by the loan repayments and investment earnings of the PFA. They're rated AAA by all three rating agencies. In total, we have about $2.3 billion in assets. Within our Clean Water Revolving Fund, we've also allocated about $90 million of funds to capitalize low-interest loan programs or for non-point source projects that are administered by the Department of Agriculture and Pollution Control Agency. The PFA receives no general funds for administration. All of our admin expenses come from project financing fees. We're a small agency staff-wise. We have 10 staff. We also pay the Pollution Control Agency for 12 FTEs, their engineers and other staff that provide those technical reviews, and about 4.5 FTEs at the Health Department. If you, the org chart that's one of those packets just kind of gives you a visual image of what I just described, the board governed by the six state commissioners, and then the role of each agency, each department in setting project priorities and the various programs that are connected to each agency, with the PFA doing the financial and program administration for all of those. The other bulleted handout that you have gives a summary of our water infrastructure financing programs, starting with the Clean Water and Drinking Water Revolving Funds that I mentioned. To date, on the clean water, which is wastewater and some stormwater treatment projects, since that fund began in 1990, we've made 565 loans for $3.1 billion. The current average annual lending capacity of the Clean Water Revolving Fund is about $95 million a year. The drinking water loans, we've made 440 loans for $919 million. And that fund hasn't been going as long as a smaller fund, average lending capacity per year of about $40 million. So that's the amount that can, without any further state or federal dollars, can revolve and be maintained in perpetuity. However, the annual loan requests that we get are 2 to 3 times that amount. And so the federal government continues to provide annual federal capitalization grants. In fact, those numbers have increased some in recent years. The state provides a 20% match to that, which is part of our, through the general obligation bonding appropriations. The next program is the Water Infrastructure Fund, or the WIF program. This is a grant program. It provides grants based on affordability criteria for high-cost projects. And we look at affordability in terms of the per-household cost of the per-household system cost, which is both the cost of the new project as well as the cost of operation, maintenance, and debt service on other debt that they have from prior projects on the system. We use the WIF grants to either offset some of the loan that we would otherwise, PFA would provide with the revolving loan funds, or to match grants with our our counterparts in the federal government, USDA Rural Development. They also administer loan and grant programs for water infrastructure. They primarily focus on small rural communities, generally less than 1,000 population. We coordinate with them a lot to help determine for as projects come through the funding process and get on the priority list, determine which program fits better for particular cities, and then help them into the, whether it's the application process for rural development or for PFA. And then if rural development is the lead funder on it, some of the WIF grant funds can go to match dollars with rural development. The next program, the Point Source Implementation Grant Program, or PSIG grants. These are grants to help cities upgrade treatment facilities to reduce discharge of specific pollutants to meet regulatory requirements. And we're talking about typically, or the most common one is phosphorus. When there's a more stringent phosphorus limit that Pollution Control Agency has determined is needed to protect or restore an impaired water, and cities then have to provide additional treatment to meet that requirement, the PSIG grant can provide up to 80% of the costs to provide that additional level of treatment, with a maximum of $7 million on those grants. That has an application process a little different. We take applications once a year in July, but all of the projects are ranked on that same Pollution Control Agency priority list. Finally, we have a small community wastewater treatment program, much smaller than the others, focused specifically on unsewered communities with non-complying septic systems that are grouped together in a density to where it's not possible or very difficult for individual property owners to have a complying septic system on their own individual lot, and so there needs to be some sort of community system. This program allows them to do small community cluster mounds and drain fields and things like that that would be then owned and operated by the community. It also provides some technical assistance grants to help the communities sort of study the problem, evaluate their options, and determine what might be best for their situation. Then I thought that maybe the one good way to kind of illustrate how this all works, you have a copy of the 2018 project awards from our 2018 annual report. And so this illustrates all of the projects that we funded in fiscal year 2018, starting with Bird Island, listed in alphabetical order, and it shows all of the different funding programs and variations across the columns. And you can see that many of the projects involve both a loan and a grant, sometimes more than one grant. Other communities only qualify for the low-interest loans. I should mention that those loans are significantly below market rate. Of course, market rates have been quite low for quite a while, and so our PFA loans have been at or near our 1% minimum. I think in FY18, the average interest rate was about 1.1% on these loans. So there's, in addition to the grants, the loans themselves provide significant savings to the communities and their residents. And with that, I will stop and be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Executive Director Freeman, before we get to questions, I do want to entertain a motion to approve the minutes from February 11th. Representative Barr moves to approve the minutes from February 11th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the minutes from February 11th are approved. Thank you, Representative Barr. All right. Are there any questions from members for Executive Director? Yes, Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're talking about the interest rates right there at the end. How do you determine your interest rate? Is it so many points below market rate, and is that what it is? I mean, could you expound on that just a little bit more, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Barr, that's exactly what it is. It's set annually by the PFA board, but the interest rate discount that we provide has been pretty constant for quite a while. We start from a AAA market, bond market scale, and then provide 1.5% below that as a base discount for all borrowers. And we also, in our rules for small communities, can qualify for some additional discounts beyond that 1.5%. And then we have a 1% minimum on our interest rates.
All right. Seeing no other questions, Representative Liz Lagarde.
I'd just like to make a comment and thank you and your staff for what you bring to small communities that don't have the resources. You've been very, very helpful, I know, to the community that I once represented in helping us understand the process and the system so we can move forward. So thank you and to your staff.
Thank you.
Wonderful program.
Representative Selk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give us some sort of a picture of what you perceive to be the demand, particularly in the underserved, unserved, and very small community space? Because to me, that's the area that has the most impact of vulnerability to our environment and to good functioning water management across the state. But what's the demand or the potential demand against your operation in that area?
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Salk, the demand, we don't actually fund a project until it's ready to go to construction. And so there are needs of a lot of communities that are working on preliminary planning and community planning about what they want to do, how much is it going to cost, and all of the engineering that goes with that. And so the demand is from year to year. The specific group of projects, we try to allow as many projects as possible to move ahead with their projects, but we're not exactly sure which communities are going to come forward in any particular year. So we do have, in fact, we just completed a estimated funding needs report for the WIF program and the point source grant program. The WIF program in particular for a lot of the small communities that you're referring to, that report is on our website. Copies went to capital investment committees. Generally, we're talking about, last year's funding request that the governor recommended for the WIF program was $80 million to serve for a two-year period. We got a small a portion of that in the general obligation bonding bill from last year. Some additional funds were appropriated in the environmental trust fund appropriation bonds that got hung up, so we haven't had access to those funds. We're right now to the point where we funded all of the projects that were approved from last year, a couple of new ones for this year, but we're going to need additional funds for those projects. So generally, you know, there is a need for, just in the WIF program, $30 to $40 million a year. I don't have a specific request to bring you right now, but that's the range that it typically is. And the point source grant program, the treatment upgrades, the governor's recommendation last year, the Governor Dayton's recommendation was $62 million in bonding for that program for a two-year period. The list of applicants is quite a bit longer than that, but again, it goes to which projects are actually going to be ready to go in a particular year. So we've got the lists, and we're putting together projections, and we expect we'll be able to have more specific information about the status of particular projects, you know, probably by the end of March or so. There's a deadline for this year's projects. Communities that are ready, that want to be ready for construction this summer, need to submit plans and specifications to the Pollution Control Agency and the Health Department by March. And so that'll give us a better idea of which projects will actually be ready to go. But that's the kind of range that we're looking at.
Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just that's really substantially the space I was asking for some sort of thing. One thing that I think exists, and oftentimes this is the institutional knowledge that crawls around inside of your head and maybe a few of your closest staff, and that is, as you are seeing over, let's say, a decade, you're seeing applications coming in, and I have a sense that there is a characteristic of those applications that are tending toward becoming more and more critical or tending toward being less and less critical individually as a group. What I'm trying to do is to get a measure of, are we behind and seeing increased critical applications and that sort of thing, or are we in good stead as to the natural history and wear on these systems?
Director Freeman.
I don't know if you got a question out of that or not.
Mr. Chair, I'll at least make a comment related to that. You may recall Governor Dayton, really starting in 2016, proposed a major increase in water infrastructure funding, recognizing that cities had growing needs and the state really had to do more to help cities meet those needs. And a big portion of those needs, the largest share of those needs, is the replacement of aging infrastructure, which every city deals with. And our loan program, that's the majority of the funding that we do, really, is replacing aging infrastructure. Every city has to deal with it. Small communities especially have difficulty. It's more of a financial challenge for smaller communities, which is where the grant programs come in. The legislative auditor recent report did an evaluation of the PFA's wastewater programs and projected that if funding were to continue as it has been in recent years, if that trend were to continue over 20 years, the PFA funding would be able to meet about 89% of the funding needs that cities would be are expected to seek help for. That tells me that we're pretty much on track to meet needs, but it will require ongoing, continued support of the programs. The needs are significant. PCA's 20-year needs survey, I think, is about $5 billion projected out over 20 years. This is information provided by cities. On the drinking water side, it's about $7 billion. But it's over 20 years, and so it doesn't all have to be done at once. The key thing is to have the funding steady and predictable so that cities can plan for it. They know what can be available, so they can make their own investments in engineering and land acquisition, other things that they need to do to get their project ready. For cities to be able to do that, they need to have some confidence that the funding will be there when their project is ready for construction. And so that's really the key thing, is having that sort of steady, predictable funding over time. And if that can continue, I think we are pretty well on track to meeting those needs.
Representative Sell.
If you will, Mr. Chair, just a comment. I would prefer if that number had been 110% as opposed to 89%. I don't find comfort in that our estimates bring us up short in an area where typically these projects start to come in at a higher and higher need and or expectation of state participation. And so I'm just looking at what I think in my lifetime has been taught to me by reality, is that these kinds of estimates tend to be greater than and more expensive than we do as human beings in our estimations. And like I said, if the number had been on the other side of 100, then I would have felt like, okay, we are set to be able to have the money and securely enter into it. So that's just a comment.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Representative Salk touched on kind of the bulk of the main focus of my question, but I have another question as well. But just playing off of that, first of all, I just really appreciate your work. I can't imagine the pressure you are under and how you maintain your calm, because I know when I talk to my communities, they all want the WIF grant, and they need it now, and sometimes they're not completely ready or so on. But my understanding in talking to you in the past is that the revolving loan fund sort of replenishes itself, and so that kind of takes care of itself, but it's that WIF, it's the grant money that you need new money each year. Is that, first of all, is that correct, a correct assumption?
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman. Well, the revolving loan fund does need additional funds each year as well, to match the federal dollars, because okay, there is an annual federal grant that comes. The state has to provide a 20% match, and so every bonding cycle, part of our request is support to help build the revolving loan fund, so that, as I mentioned, there's significant lending capacity there, but the demand is greater, and so we do need to keep building those funds. But they are the funding requests there, and the funding need year to year is less than the grant side.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yep.
And so I also understand, now you've corrected me on that false assumption I had, is that the last time I talked to you, it seemed as though you had enough funding for the projects that were ready in 2018, but projects that are in the docket waiting in 2019, you have no funding available for those grant projects. Is that correct?
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, we have a small amount of funding from prior appropriations that will go to 2019 projects, but you know, we follow the priority order, and it will only, the money we currently have will only fund a small share of the projects that are seeking to go to construction this year.
Okay. And then, Mr. Chair,
Representative Lehman,
I just have two more questions. And so to fund the remaining projects, did I hear you say about $30 to $40 million would be required?
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lehman, I don't have a specific number that I need for this year. I'm not prepared with that today. What I said is that's generally been about the, you know, per year need on average. So exactly how much do we need for 2019 projects? I'm not prepared with that number today. And then, of course, keep in mind that in our mind, we're looking at fiscal year. We're only 5 months away from 2020. And so the need for the 2019 projects is one thing, but we're hoping that we can continue to get some funding that will allow those 2020 projects to keep moving as well.
Okay. Then my final question,
Representative Layden.
Mr. Chair. Thank you. I'm new to the committee is new, as a matter of fact. We're all new, but also new to capital investments. So we just recently heard a request from the Metropolitan Council for some funding for wastewater infrastructure and so on. Does your organization exclude the Metropolitan Council communities?
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Layman, we provide loans to the Metropolitan Council for their upgrade and rehabilitation of their treatment plants. Because Met Council, as you know, they have seven or eight wastewater treatment plants, and then all of the major interceptors in the entire metro area. We just earlier this year made a loan of $45 million to Met Council for their work, and that's been about, on average, that's about what we make to them per year. The request that I think they had was for the I&I funding that they are hoping to get to then provide through grants to their member communities to help the cities, individual cities, do projects to remove I&I from the system. I&I is an issue for every city. Every system has some amount of I&I, and for many cities it can be excessive to the point where it costs a lot to run that clear water through the treatment plant. And cities, we fund a lot of sewer rehab projects that are designed to help remove I&I. Met Council has had a successful program in their structure of providing funding to their communities. So that was their request. But it was specific to the I&I. It's not the funding for their treatment plants and interceptors is from PFA and then also okay. from some of their own funding.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Selk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is maybe a completely different type of question. The process of people getting through the queue for with their loan app and that sort of thing, there could be a couple of barriers and or things that are slowing the process down for them individually as to why we then don't have more throughput in terms of successful programs out and running. So one of the processes could be that your office is unable to process more of those loan apps than what you do, and that meaning that there's just a finite amount of approval that's available for the physical aspect of doing it. The other one is also quite a strong one, that is it's typical that people are very unprepared to actually execute their project even when they make application. Which of those two seems to be the predominant area? And I know that I understand what I'm asking you. So.
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure which is the most predominant. We, I think, keep up to speed pretty well on the applications. But and then, of course, there's not just my staff, but Pollution Control Agency and Health Department, the review engineers, the environmental reviewers, all the people that also have a role in reviewing projects. So there's a significant workload there, and you know, staffing is always something that we need to watch for and make sure we've got the resources to to keep up with the demand. But what I think probably happens a lot is these are very expensive and complicated projects for communities to do. Bigger cities will have capital improvement plans and sort of be able to work projects through their process, and probably be more prepared somewhat to move projects in a timely manner. For small communities, it's expensive, it's challenging just figuring out the a feasible treatment alternative and a feasible way to pay for the project, even with the grants that we provide and the low interest loans. Oftentimes cities will have to increase rates to take on a big project, and so that nobody ever likes to do that, and so that can take some time for city councils and city leaders to sort of understand what's going to be the rate burden on there and how best to manage that and how to plan it, also planning for growth of the community and phasing projects, and it can just take a while. And so communities get on the priority list when they know they have some kind of need, but turning that need into a project that's ready to build can oftentimes take a number of years.
Thank you. Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Freeman, good to see you again. You know, there's one thing that's always bothered me. The MPC does a very good job of determining what the priorities are, what jobs should be done for the environment and other reasons. And then they give it to you, and then you go negotiate with the community to say when are you going to be ready for it and get all your work done. But my question is, what expertise does that local town council of five people in the town of Lewisville, Minnesota, that we had to do a couple times, what expertise do they have to determine how they're going to spend the $2 or $3 million that you have for them to spend? What do they know? They determine whether you're going to have this type of system or another type of system. What educational process is there to help them get along other than hiring an outside engineer that really probably doesn't have that community's best intentions in their mind? They look at the biggest check they can get, probably. Mm. Is there any way we can educate those people in that little town of Lewisville, 37 buildings, to spend the $2 million we have for them to have a sewage treatment plant so they can add a dishwasher in the American Legion Hall?
Director Freeman.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther. Well, you're certainly right that it's a challenge for small communities to sort of understand all the ins and outs of the technical side of things as well as the financing side. Cities do rely on consulting engineers play a big role, and cities, I think for the most part, consulting engineers do a good job, and cities develop relationships with their consulting engineer. Hopefully, a lot of times it works best that they find an engineer that can put in the work to understand their system and understand the community and, help maybe look. But typically, projects are done in phases over time. So having that continuity, the engineer can play a tremendous role in helping the city through that process. Also, my staff, PFA staff, spend a lot of time on the phone and in meetings with small town city clerks, city administrators, public works people, explaining both the funding process as well as various kinds of financing options. How long should the term of the loan be, and can we structure it in a way that may work best to fit around other debt or other issues that the city is dealing with. So every city is different, and we work closely with those communities to kind of work through that. And then, of course, as I mentioned, we have USDA Rural Development, our federal counterparts, and they actually have staff out in field offices throughout the state, and they do a great job in one-on-one help for those small communities too, which is really a lot of what it takes.
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with that, but I still think it would be nice to have at least a question and answer session with the MPCA, PFA, and you, and the town council, and throw U.S. Rural Development in there. Take a little time. They know the best way to say no that anybody ever met.
Director Freeman.
He's my roommate, by the way.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gunther, just one other thing that I neglected to mention. Minnesota Rural Water Association is a great organization that provides help to small communities about water infrastructure, both operationally as well as long-term management, capital planning, asset management, as well as they hold workshops that my staff and PCA and health department staff attend to provide information on the funding programs and the process, and that's a great organization that really goes very much to addressing those issues.
Thank you.
Director Freeman, I see you do have the authority to sell some revenue bonds. Is that only for the revolving loan programs, the clean water and the drinking water funds?
Mr. Chair, yes, for the most part, it is the revolving funds, and it's backed by the repayments from those prior loans that we've made. We do have, and it's not been very active recently, but we do have a small transportation revolving loan fund that we've worked with MnDOT on in the past, and we have sold on occasion quite a while ago now, some bonds for some small transportation projects. But for the most part, it's all the clean water and drinking water revolving funds.
Thank you. And then what's the average amount you sell in bonds every year, every biennium, for those three different programs?
Mr. Chair, we sell bonds based on a cash flow need, and also then based on our lending projections. The last time we went to market to sell bonds actually was spring of 2016. We anticipate we'll probably be selling bonds again sometime toward the end of this year or into 2020. So that's kind of a longer period of time than we usually go. Usually it's about every two or three years.
And then just real quick, what was the number, or how many bonds were sold in spring of 16, and how much do you anticipate selling here in the next couple of years?
Mr. Chair, I seem to remember that in 2016 we sold about $360 million in new money bonds, and then there were some refunding bonds as well. I think, you know, we sized the bonds based on anticipated cash flow needs. There were some reasons why we, in 2016, kind of pushed that a little bit and sold more, which is why we haven't now sold for 3 years, probably going on 4 years before we sell again. So it's part of it is looking at anticipated cash needs, anticipated projected loans and loan demand, and then as well as sort of understanding the bond market, working with our financial advisor to kind of determine what's the best way to size the bonds. So it can vary.
Thank you. And is any of that dependent on how much the legislature appropriates the PFA, and specifically, I mean, I assume the legislature appropriates some general fund dollars for these programs. Does that play into it also?
Mr. Chair, there's no general fund dollars that are appropriated, but there are state GO bonds that go into providing that 20% match. The bonds that we sell are really more about what are the current loans and the projected revenues from current loans in terms of the sizing. That's the AAA rating that we get is based on having significant revenue coverage from all those existing loans. the future federal grants and the future, hopefully, 20% state match are really about building the annual leverage or lending capacity, the $95 million, the $40 million on drinking water. Really, I think we'd like to build that probably by, well, I don't have a number, but those numbers need to be built up to really meet those long-term needs as part of the OLA's projection of how much could we do over 20 years. The Clean Water Drink Water Revolving Funds are a big share of what they've projected would be the PFA funding to meet those needs. And to continue to do that, we need those state and federal dollars to continue to build that lending capacity.
Okay, thank you. Do not see any other member questions, so I appreciate you you stopping by the committee and letting us know what's going on. We do have a bill up next that does deal with the Clean Water Fund, so if you can just stand by for any possible questions that might come up, appreciate it. Thank you. Representative Poppy, we have your bill, House File 411. Okay. Hello, Representative Poppy, and I will move your bill, House File 411, to be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm pleased to be here before you to seek money for the PFA and for Mr. Freeman gave just such a detailed description and gave us written information that's very helpful to know really what they do and how the money is spent. Throughout Minnesota, there's a need for wastewater services, as we all probably have some situations. Representative Gunther described his, and Representative Liz Lagarde, we've had a few different descriptions about what the needs are in Greater Minnesota. So we certainly know that making sure that we have wastewater treatments and wastewater funds and clean drinking water and all of those things are important to all of us throughout the state of Minnesota. And many of these things are coming due because when you started building, sometimes things don't last forever, and we have to make some accommodations for that. So what this bill does is it seeks $128 million in general obligation bonds for the PFA. And our House File 411 House Research does describe what that is, but I'm just going to detail it out so that people can know what we're looking for. So $128 million from the bond proceeds would help to fund $11 million for matching federal grants for the Clean Water Revolving Fund and the Drinking Water Revolving Fund, $55 million for grants to eligible municipalities under the Water Infrastructure Funding Program, and $62 million for grants to eligible municipalities under the Point Source Implementation Grants Program. And with me today is my city administrator, so we have Craig Clark from Austin, and he's going to be able to provide you some testimony on the need that that my community has. So I appreciate the opportunity to have him testify.
Mr. Clark, welcome. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you. My name is Craig Clark, city administrator for the city of Austin, as well as I'm here for the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I serve on their board of directors. We appreciate Representative Poppy introducing this legislation, being the chief author and the other folks that have co-authored this legislation. This is a vital piece of legislation to help our communities all across Minnesota. Our cities play an essential role in protecting Minnesota's waters and wastewater and stormwater systems, and we take those responsibilities very seriously. We do that every day at our wastewater treatment plant by discharging cleaner water out of the plant than is even the receiving body of water. The need for these funds is very high. According to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, over $5 billion is needed over the next 20 years to keep up with wastewater infrastructure needs. That number is difficult to estimate for cities as we're trying to deal with regulatory compliance and factoring those in as far as the equipment in the plant is concerned. Drinking water estimates are even higher than that of wastewater. Austin is in line to receive $1.3 million in a PSEG grant to address imminent public health threats to both surface and groundwater from failing septic systems impacting the Turtle Creek and Cedar River in Austin. This is a residential area that was annexed by the city with the council's understanding that we wanted to try to help the environment. It wasn't that we wanted to annex out of any necessity per se, but the area was having these troubles with their septic systems, and we wanted to provide some assistance to them as well as protect our neighboring water supply. We were all set to go until we got word of the legal challenge. We hope that this bill can move forward quickly so that we can address the environmental concerns. Austin's not alone. City of Hoyt Lakes needs to upgrade its facilities to remove mercury from the water flowing into Lake Superior, and the Great Lakes Initiative as part of its permit and has been waiting for a PSEG grant and cannot move forward without this legislation. Little Falls is also waiting for $7 million in state grant to upgrade their wastewater facility and address phosphorus load to the Mississippi River. We've included in your packet a handout that outlines several other communities and their need. If you could take a look at that, we'd sure appreciate that and bring that to your attention. These projects are ready to go, and construction can begin this year in many instances. Delaying action on this legislation only continues to hurt the environment, and we'd plead for quick action on this request from Representative Poppy. Moreover, delaying funding for this really keeps a backlog of projects. Austin is also up for renewal of our wastewater treatment plant facility. We're currently in phase two facility design, and that's supposed to be completed by mid-March. Parts of our wastewater plant are as old as the 1930s, just to give you a sense of how old these facilities are. For planning purposes, we also estimate the improvements to be in the neighborhood of $40 million, so it also gives you a sense of the magnitude of the cost that the City of Austin is looking at on behalf of our businesses and residents. Over the last several years, we appreciate the state's increased commitment to funding these programs. As has been mentioned, these are vitally important to partner with you and protect the waters of Minnesota. Thank you, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Clark. Representative Anderson, or would you mind holding off? We can have the testifiers, and we'll get back to you. Thank you. Next up is Brad Ruse, General Manager from the City of Marshall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Mr. Rose isn't here, but I do have a stand-in.
Mr. Chair.
Welcome, Mr. Seifert. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ruse was delayed with his wife's surgery, so I'm standing in. Since I'm from Marshall, it works well, I guess, for me to read his testimony, and then I'll have a little bit myself. My name is Marty Seifert. I'm Government Relations with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to testify on House Bill 411. Thank you to Representative Poppy and many co-authors of this legislation, including our legislator, Representative Swazinski. I would know it more effective than his predecessor for bringing this bill forward. Marshall Municipal Utilities is the water utility that serves Marshall, Minnesota. Located in southwest Minnesota, many jobs in Marshall require a lot of water to support them. Almost a billion gallons of water per year is produced from the wells drilled into the prairie around our community. The raw water is hard. Almost all water utility customers use an ion exchange water softening system within their homes and businesses. And these softeners are regenerating using a salt brine, resulting in a salty discharge into the community's wastewater treatment facility. The treated wastewater flows into the Redwood River, but the treatment process cannot reduce the salt content of the water. In Marshall, the amount of salt or chloride entering the Redwood River is limited by permit conditions in the community's permit issued by the MPCA. The wastewater treatment facility cannot remove the salt, so the only cost-effective way to reduce salt entering the river is to keep it out of the wastewater leaving the homes and businesses in Marshall. Marshall has designed a drinking water softening enhancement that will reduce the hardness of the treated drinking water from 35 grains to 6 grains using enhanced softening processes at our water treatment plant. Project is estimated to cost $10.6 million and will increase the already high cost of drinking water by more than a dollar per 1,000 gallons. When finished, the amount of salt entering the river will be dramatically reduced, allowing the permit condition for chlorides to be met. In 2018, MMU worked with Minnesota Public Facilities Authority to qualify for grant dollars under the Point Sources Implementation Grant Program, or PSIG. 2018 legislature provided authorization to sell appropriation bonds in support of PSIG and other PFA programs. We have not received our grant, however, because the funds have been tied up in the recent lawsuit. Neither Marshall nor the affected community members of CGMC wishes to take any position on the merits of funding of PSIG from this source. Rather, we wish to fix last year's sources and provide necessary funding for PSIG in 2019 for the long list of water quality projects advanced by our communities. House File 411 by Representative Poppy would do this, and Marshall and many other communities are ready to invest in our water quality improvements across the state. So, Mr. Chair, that is Mr. Ruse's testimony. I'll just follow up with a couple items on our behalf of the coalition. As members know, this legislation seeks $128 million in GO bonds for the PFA, $62 million dedicated to the PSIG program, $55 million for WIF, and $11 million for federal matching grants and the Clean Water Fund. $128 million, people are wondering where did this come from. It reflects the amount that was requested for PFA last year that was not funded in GO bonds in last year's bonding bill. It does replace the $59 million that was funded through the appropriation bonds, but as all of you probably know, the lawsuit is holding that up, and so these grant programs are not being funded because the bonds are not being sold. And if the bonds are not sold, the dollars that were appropriated by last year's legislature cannot flow through the PFA to our communities. Cities throughout the state need to provide water services to their citizens, and this is a challenge for particularly small communities. The Metropolitan Council provides these services in the metro area. They are able to spread the costs among millions of people. However, it does also benefit the metro area because they are in line to receive some PSIG funding, and the Metropolitan Council Environmental Services receives clean water revolving funds from the PFA as well. So we do believe that this is a need, not a want. This legislature from last year passed a bonding bill we felt was good. It funded a lot of our programs, but because of the lawsuit, we are sitting right now with the large challenge of these programs being stagnant, and the cost of implementing these particular treatment plants is getting expensive, more expensive by the month. Mm-hmm. And the longer we wait, the higher cost we will have. So we would ask that House 5411 be recommended to pass and be referred over to the bonding committee for further consideration and hopeful passage this session. I can stand for any questions you might have.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Seifert. I appreciate you pulling double duty today. We do have one more person on the list to testify, so we'll let him testify, and then if you can stick around, we can ask any questions that might come up. Thank you. And last up is Bill Black with the Municipal Utilities Association. Mr. Black, welcome, and please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Bill Black with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. MMUA's mission is to unify, support, and serve as a common voice for Minnesota's municipal utilities. MMUA does not advocate against mandated effluent limits or drinking water, safe drinking water standards. In fact, Minnesota's municipal utilities are sort of where the rubber meets the road in terms of state policy for implementing the safe water policies that you come up with. But we do strenuously urge the legislature to fund the programs necessary to meet those important health and environmental requirements. And if I could, I would give you just one more anecdote from a community in southern Minnesota, Mountain Lake, with a population of 2,104. They are currently in the situation where they have three wastewater ponds, one large primary pond and two secondary smaller ponds that were constructed in the 1960s. And they have reached the capacity, and the community has breached the need for more capacity to handle its wastewater. And that situation has been ongoing for some time now. In fact, 25 times, unfortunately, the PCA has had to impose a permit violation to the community due to the limited capacity. Fortunately, it understands the funding situation and has waived those fees pending new availability of funds. So what the community has sought is two new wastewater ponds that would be built with modern aeration for odor control, something more in line with 21st century needs, and 80% of the cost determined by the PFA's Point Source Implementation Fund would be a $2.75 million grant. And additional funding from the Water Infrastructure Program funded by this bill would help cover part of the remaining 20%. And the rest would come from an increase in sewer rates for the Mountain Lake residents. One thing that isn't that maybe is unique to this situation is the land that would have to be purchased in order to build the new wastewater ponds is currently farmland, and the owners were uncertain last spring whether they should plant it or not because the funding was in the hands of the legislature. So the ongoing limbo of the funding currently means that they're uncertain again this year whether to include crops on this land in their farm business plan. So, you know, just one small anecdote among many stories of all the communities that would be funded under this bill. And just generally speaking, last year and for several years now, one of the top legislative priorities for MMUA has been funding for programs under the Public Facilities Authority. We are often here at the legislature on behalf of electric and natural gas utilities, but more and more we need to be here to urge folks to understand the crisis that we're facing in terms of water and wastewater infrastructure funding. And so last year we thought that we had achieved some success to some degree in the funding for the PFA's priorities. However, this year we're back again to ask for last year's funding as well as the remaining amount needed to meet the needs calculated by the PFA. So we appreciate your Representative Poppy bringing this legislation forward. We urge your support and hope that we can move this funding forward and move on to more funding needs for these same priorities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Black. All right, member questions. First up, we have Representative Anderson. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking over the handout sheet that had the map of the state and those eight projects on there that was handed out during testimony. And the one that kind of pops out at me, and I'm not picking on Little Falls, but their project cost was the highest of the ones on this list. It has to do with reducing phosphorus discharge into the Mississippi River. And just wondering if anybody here would have any details as to the amount of reduction that would be attained from a cost of that expense. I think back to the city of Alexandria last year, they were looking at having to spend, I think, $14 million to reduce phosphorus discharge. And it wasn't a real large reduction. But they worked with the MPCA, did a good job of coming up with a plan that may reach that same goal with a far lower cost. So just wondering if some of these projects, if they look at a cost-benefit analysis and if there may be a cheaper way to achieve these same results, and just happen to see that one because the cost is fairly high.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Anderson, it looks like Mr. Seifert's coming to the table. Mr. Seifert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I do have a letter from the city of Little Falls. I can probably have the staff maybe make copies later and distribute to you, but they have had a high phosphorus level there. They also have an aging infrastructure, so it's not all about, I mean, this is a mixture of regulation and aging infrastructure. It's not all one or all of the other, but they do have a fairly high phosphorus problem there. They are expected to get a $7 million grant. I think, as all of you know, the PSIG program largely deals with phosphorus cleanup. And so when the lawsuit hit and the appropriations bonds were aimed to fund the PSIG program in particular, those programs, like Little Falls, were all kind of knocked down. So whether there's a cost-benefit analysis, Mr. Freeman might know if something was related to that. They do have to do a facilities plan through the PFA to justify the dollars being spent. So everybody who's on Mr. Freeman's list has to go through a fairly rigorous facilities plan to justify it.
Okay. All right. Other member questions? Mr. Seifert, I heard you and I heard a couple other members whisper about this a little bit. Can you just talk about the lawsuit that you were referencing in your testimony?
Mr. Chair, I can, and I'm not a lawyer, but I can pretend to be one here momentarily. So the legislature last year, Mr. Chair, for those who are not freshmen on the committee, I think most people were here as members last year. Representative Brand maybe wasn't. But you were city councilman, so you're aware of this as well. The legislature last year passed a bonding bill that had a portion of the PFA funding funded out of appropriation bonds from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. Appropriation bonds are non-general fund bonds backed by a different revenue source that may come into play. In this particular case, the money flows through the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, which is a recurring amount of money. The interest rate is higher. If you argue on the fiscal side of things, but the legislature, you know, like it or not, made this decision, and so we don't take a position whether this was good or bad. But a group of environmental organizations came together last fall before the bond sale and filed a lawsuit. The lawsuit was not dispensed with or agreed to be heard by the court, so it's just kind of sitting there. Commissioner Franz, you know, my opinion, rightfully didn't sell the bonds because nobody's going to buy these things when they're caught up in litigation. And so, you know, the executive branch is not particularly contesting this aggressively right now. It's sitting in limbo. And so the bonds are not being sold. The PFA is not being funded. The communities are not getting their money for these particular grants. And, you know, the legislature could have a hearing on this or whatever to try to get that figured out. In the meantime, regardless of thoughts on the lawsuit, all of these projects are getting more expensive and are being held up. And so it is a bit of a quandary. We would like that lawsuit resolved one way or another. I mean, potentially, if the court even hears this and it's litigated through the spring and the summer, you're still looking at potentially a 1 to 2 year delay, and then if the bonds are sold, you have to go through the bond selling process with Moody's and Standard & Poor's. They may not get sold until the fall of the following year of the litigation settlement. So, you know, we just are very frustrated as a city's group that we can't wait around for this process to resolve itself through the other branch of government, the other two branches, frankly, that need to be dealing with this. This branch did its job last year. Whether people agree with it or not, they have to figure that out for themselves. So now we're coming back to this branch of government and asking them to dispense with this in the only way I think that they know how, which is to do a geobond program.
All right. Thank you for that, Mr. Seifert. Any other member questions? Yes, Representative Lehman.
This might, thank you, Mr. Chair, might be a question for you or maybe the author of the bill. This bill was referred to us, obviously, from Ways and Means. Where does it go? If it passes us here today now, where does it go?
It will go back to Ways and Means. I understand that Chair Hansen has also requested to hear the bill, so I assume Ways and Means would then, by memo, refer it to Environment and Natural Resource Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then it would go back to Ways and Means from there?
Thank you, Representative Lehman. Yes, it would go back to Ways and Means and then ending up in capital investment.
Okay. I need a diagram, but okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Additional questions? Seeing none, are there any other... Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Brand.
Well, just a comment. I just wanted to mention that in my district, there's the Lake Jefferson Wastewater association that's in need of funding in order to be compliant with their needs, and they can't, again, with that lawsuit. And so whatever we can do to do with money and then with the PISIG grants as well, I'm very supportive of getting this stuff done, because there are a lot of good projects that are meant to be compliant projects that are being held up right now.
Thank you, Representative Brand. This is a public hearing. Are there any other members from the public who wish to testify for or against House File 411? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 411 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and House File 411 is recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Chair.
And with that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.